Sound Pages is a literary series featuring resident artists in the Jack Straw Writers Program.
Their gods feast on our anguish. Their efforts prolong our agony. Their gods treasure our torture.
This program features the work of 2023 writer Jim Cantu. In the first half, you'll hear his conversation with curator Priscilla Long, recorded in the Jack Straw Studio.
Could you first describe your project for Jack Straw?
A lot of my work is on kind of telling the historical story of people of color, indigenous people, Latinos, because a lot of it is just ignored by our traditional educational establishments. I think one of the things that struck me so strongly is the notion of genocide. Mm-hmm. And there have been many, many horrible genocides and atrocities in the world, but no one talks about the genocide and the atrocities against the indigenous people on this continent.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we're taught in school new ways of looking at it. It was manifest destiny that, you know, it was a certain God-given right or destiny. And that's why we had to take over the entire continent, well, from sea to shining sea. So that's my goal, is to, you know, do some writings, particularly addressing some historical references to historical incidents that people may not be aware of.
Yeah, yeah. And so what made you a writer? I mean, did you have books? Did they read to you? What were there people that you looked up to or anything like that when you were growing up?
I think, well, one of the things when I was growing up, I mean, my mother loved books. And so she would take us to the library. Mm. And Olympia had a Carnegie library. Mm. And so we would go take the bus to the library. And I remember, you know, and I would get my 7 books, because that was the maximum you could get, take them home, and usually finish reading the first one before evening. It was an escape. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would read anything I could get my hands on. Mm. And sometimes just things for, I remember there were competitions, how many books you can read. And so someone challenged me one time. It was almost like a dictionary of very fat encyclopedia type book. And I said, I'll go through it page by page. I'll read that. Information has always fascinated me.
Mm, interesting. At what point did you begin to study your indigenous heritage? At what point did this information start coming to you? And
I guess there was always an interest, and we would go down to Texas to visit family there, and, you know, and see, like, my great-great-great-grandfather was the county clerk for the Cameron County in Texas in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And so we knew we would see the ledgers with his handwriting.
Oh, neat.
And so it was, you know, this sense of a history and a past. And so that really interested me. Mm. When I was in high school, I became more interested in writing. Mm-hmm. And so took writing classes. And actually, when I graduated, really wanted to be a writer.
Oh.
But then I got the head of the English department at the UW. And I have creative skills, but my grammar is not all that wonderful. And so he would actually give me a split grade. One for creativity and the other one for grammar. And eventually kind of soured me on the notion of
Oh, that's too bad.
Of writing.
Yeah, yeah. So did you write, you know, privately in a, keep a journal or anything like that during those years after college?
Not really. I would write a little bit, but not that much. Mm-hmm. And after I got married, you know, and that kind of takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife gave me a journal to write in to try to encourage me. And I still didn't really write all that much. Mm. But then when she passed away, I found the journal. And so it was a release to kind of return to writing.
So when she passed, that's when you started, like, writing a lot?
A lot more. Though.
Yeah.
She had brain surgery and suffered a stroke and so wasn't able to return to work. And so she was in the hospital for almost 2 months.
Oh, geez.
And so when I was in the hospital room with her, I would, you know, a journal and just write down what was going on, what I was feeling. And that was therapeutic for me. That helped me get through that. So that kind of rekindled the joy of writing.
Do you find opportunities to, well, I think you do find opportunities to present the work to the community. And do you find people receptive to the histories that you're putting out?
I think so. I mean, I'd like to think so. I think one of the other things that struck me, and maybe this is branching out on the question, but one of the reasons I got into radio was I went and saw a writer at a community event. And he, you know, he was amazing, Luis Rodriguez from L.A. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, but the only people that can hear these amazing things that he's saying and his amazing words are the people that are in this room right now.
Oh, interesting.
And so if I can record and then share it with people, so that's what kind of got me back into doing radio.
Oh, and so that was about how long have you been in radio now?
Well, so I actually started in radio. My undergraduate degree is in radio TV production.
Oh.
So when I was still in undergraduate school at the UW, I went and had a radio program on KRAB.
Oh.
Which was a radio station, a volunteer radio station that kind of moved around in various interesting locations. And I had a Latin music show.
Oh.
And then working with some people in the community, we had a news program that we did on KRAB. We had another news and public affairs show that we did on one of the African-American community stations. So we would just go in and ask them, can we get some airtime? We'd like to do a show.
Cool. so this is a really long-term type of thing.
Well, so I've had an interest in it for a long time. But I got away from it and went into government and business and now have returned to it.
Yeah, so that's interesting because you return to writing and return to radio at the same time, more or less. Yeah. So I guess last question is, what do you want your legacy to be?
I would hope my legacy would be that I would get the writings that I share with people, make them think. Maybe make them think about things in a slightly different way, or at least make them think about things. Mm-hmm. It's so easy with all of this media and, you know, I was going to say people's attachment to phones, and I look down at the number of phones that I have. But it's so easy to be kind of in our own silo of information, and we're not interacting with other people. We're not really exploring the beauties that are out there in the world and, you know, the amazing things that have happened and becoming more aware of kind of how those things happen. I think a lot of times stories are specifically structured to teach certain lessons,
mm-hmm.
And to categorize people in a certain way. And I would like to have the stories that I share get people to think a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And as a writer, I have those doubts of, mm-hmm. you know, are my words worthy? You know, and maybe I would say to people listening, you know, try to have the courage to maybe share what you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're writing, that's wonderful, because I think it's also, I find it a release,
mm-hmm.
A way to get, you know, your feelings down on paper, and maybe you don't feel comfortable sharing it with other people. But sometimes maybe what you have written and what you share will help someone else with something that they're going through.
Now we'll hear a selection from Jim's live reading.
Counting back, our counting started 5 centuries before the birth of your Christ. Honor sacred 4 corners and the center of 5. 4 groups of 5, we count in 20s, not 10s. Watching the stars, tracing their movements, celestial bodies marking time, calendars closely defined, from time of this creation, el quinto sol, the 5th sun, time to plant, time to harvest, time to worship, offer our thanks to our gods, homage and sacrifice, Tepeyac temple raised to honor Mother Tonatzin, gifts in tribute, necklace of maize flowers, golden circles, sacred tortillas, food we share with the gods, and our lifeblood. We honor you, our mother. Texcoco Prince, Tlacatecatl, General commanding warriors, Mother Tonatzin, hear my prayer. Aliens from the east, over 100,000 killed by their Black Death. Should we join the many kingdoms who have aligned with them? Can we trust them? Join to defeat the Mexicas? Those they call Aztecs? Bolster their small band with our 10,000 warriors? End the tyranny? Victory is ours. Our time, Mexica calendar, 2 Atzemotli, 13 Catl, Quatliwi, Quatliwi, 1st Tonali of the 1st Tresena, day and time of the eagle, your year, 1531. Comforting warmth of victory cooled over the 10 years since the Mexica's defeat. Sweet blossoms of success turned to bitter ash. Noble princesses married to Spaniards to seal false bargains. Sacred temples razed to gaping wounds in hallowed ground. In winning, did we lose ourselves? To speak old ways is forbidden. To carry on old traditions is forbidden. To worship our gods is forbidden. Tongues torn from mouths, punished by torture, dismemberment, burning death. Sacred Mother Tonatzin, have you forsaken us? Hear this plea from your Texcoco prince. Are these aliens even human? Their god does not feed off normal sacrifices, gifts of food or blood, exchanging our life to sustain our gods. Quick, swift sacrifice. No, their gods feast on our anguish. Their efforts prolong our agony. Their gods treasure our torture. Our Texcoco prince hears the words of Mother Tonatzin and answers. Yes, Mother, you have learned about these foreigners by watching from afar. Yes, all people honor the mother. Yes, I will help save our people. I will take the tale you told me to their head priest. On the site of your old temple at Tepeyac, servants of this new god will build a shrine, a church to honor the mother. I take them a sign of your lasting love for our people, a sign the aliens cannot ignore, a bridge between old and new. Yes, Mother Tonantzin, I will learn their ways, their language. I will teach others to pass on our old ways hidden in their new. I will take a name in their tongue, Juan Diego. Our Texcoco prince did as his goddess instructed and became Juan Diego. And he prayed in her new temple. Madre Santa, Nuestra Madre, dame tu bendición. And whispered, Mother Tonantzin. I write a lot of like historical stuff. And this is from more contemporary times, relatively speaking. A flock of vampires. When do we stand up? How far do we go to protect our rights and freedoms? What about our neighbors' rights? Or people 1,000 miles away on our southern border? Let me tell you a story of mi gente, nuestro gente del valle, though we each come from our own valle. This is the story of someone who stood up. But do I have the right to tell our stories? What is history but one person's point of view? These are true events we do not hear about often. Let's set the time frame. 1821, Mexico wins freedom from Spain. 1829, Mexico abolishes slavery. But some white immigrants in the Mexico state of Texas begin a movement to start an independent slave-owning country. 1836, Texas declares independence from Mexico. 1846, the U.S. invades Mexico and after 2 years of battle, overruns Mexico City. You must remember the song, From the Halls of Montezuma. Well, that's the war. 1848, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo grants U.S. over half of Mexico's territory. Juan Nepomuceno Cortina Jose Ochoa, Red Robber of the Rio Grande, or Robin Hood of the Valle Rio Grande. The Cortinas were a rich family owning property on both sides of the new U.S.-Mexico border. Juan fought the Yankee horde when they invaded his country in the mid-1840s. He continued his fight for his community in the newly established U.S. territory. But promises of full citizenship and equal rights were dashed by land swindles, arsons, and assassinations. Racial profiling and police violence against people of color are sadly centuries-old practices. Cortina stopped a sheriff from brutalizing a Mexican-American citizen. How do you respect law enforcement that doesn't respect you? In 1859, in desperation, he and a group of like-minded citizens took control of the city of Brownsville, Texas. Cortina published a proclamation in the local newspaper calling for equal treatment of Mexican-American citizens and the protection of basic civil rights. Cortina noted that a flock of vampires in the guise of men came and scattered themselves in our settlements without any capital except the corrupt heart and the most perverse intentions. Cortina went on to provide support on both sides of the border. He fought on the side of Union troops in the U.S. Civil War. He led a group of vaqueros for Don Benito Juarez at the Battle of Puebla against the French. Sadly, he died in Mexico City, prisoner of dictator Porfirio Diaz. We've heard the expression that history just shows us that we cannot learn from the past. Over 160 years later, another flock of vampires, in the guise of humans, have descended upon our settlements to steal our basic rights as citizens. They want to bring down the foundational pillars of our democracy. Charging a fee to vote is no longer legal, but making it more difficult for some people to vote is legal. Nearly 20 million voters have been removed from voter registration lists, many with the name Garcia or Chin, or with African American ancestry. Texas, New Mexico, and Georgia lead the nation in shutting down polling places. And guess whose neighborhoods get excluded? Convenient drop-off boxes are being replaced with voting centers far away from neighborhoods of color. In the last major election, many inner-city residents stood in line for hours just to cast their vote. Those flocks of vampires want to drain the blood and political power of us all. How will we stand against them? Will we exercise our right to vote? I'll stand up. Will you? When do we stand up? One last piece, kind of from a more personal note. I had the wonderful good fortune and blessing to share my life with a remarkable lady. This is my song of solitude. Let me sing to you a song of solitude. Darn the torn threads of damaged dreams. Piece together the puzzle of my shattered heart. We promised each other forever, a vow taken with pomp and celebration before family and friends. Nearly four decades, how did they pass so quickly? Was I paying attention to the wrong things or the wrong people? Her surprising and soft touch on my neck, a reminder of her love. So hungry for human contact that I grow my hair long, pretending that some part of her lingers. Another night of broken promises, forgotten whispers of desire, spoken only to myself. Thank you.
Sound Pages is a Jack Straw production, produced by Carlos Nieto and Daniel Gunther at Jack Straw Cultural Center. Our recording engineers are Daniel Gunther, Ayesha Ubiadelica, and Steve DeTore. Our theme music is by Brian Smith, produced through the Jack Straw Artist Support Program. The 2023 curator of this program is Priscilla Long, and the narrator for this podcast is Carlos Nieto. The Jack Straw Writers Program was inspired by an over-the-back fence conversation in 1996 between author Rebecca Brown and Jack Straw Executive Director Joan Rabinowitz. The program is made possible with support from the City of Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, For Culture, Washington State Arts Commission, the U District Partnership, National Endowment for the Arts, Rainier Institute and Foundation, Arts Fund, and individual contributors. All of the writers heard in this series are published in the Jack Straw Writers Anthology. You can subscribe to this and other Jack Straw podcasts through your favorite podcast app. To hear more episodes and learn about our other programs, visit us at jackstraw.org.